Welcome back. You're watching Stock Watch with me, Bright Kumalo. Taking your questions on the line this evening are Nick Crail from Ashburton Investments and Alex Days from Umthombo Wealth. Don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS at 41392 or email us at stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at Business Day TV using the hashtag StockWatch. Before we get into your questions this evening, let's start off with some content from Bloomberg. Here's a quick take from Vincent Jouvence, JP Morgan's asset management global market strategist, on how rising oil prices are affecting his asset allocation.
We have to be vigilant that in the short term, driven by a commodity price, but also driven by other elements, obviously, there's a pressure on cost at the moment for corporate. There's a pressure possibly on margin, which is why an earnings season like we have at the moment is particularly interesting for economists, because we can hear from corporate management how this does this affect their earnings. Especially the trading earnings, but obviously their forecast going forward. So clearly from a cross-asset perspective and within equity market is understanding those sectors which are well correlated with the current dynamic that we see. And clearly these higher oil price go together with upwards revision on interest rate here and there, which support a bit more, let's say, the value or the cyclical stocks within the market. From a cross asset perspective, it's fair to say that this inflation pickup that we see driven by this higher oil price is clearly negative for duration. So I would say for asset allocator, the way to go at the moment is clearly short duration and long equities. If you look for a hedge against inflation, equity still stands out in what you have available as an asset allocator.
Good evening, Nick and Alex. Welcome to Stockwatch. we heard the gents from Bloomberg basically talking about the rising oil and how it's affecting his asset allocation. Is it affecting your asset allocation? I'll start with you, Nick. And if so,
certainly,
how?
So let's unpack it slightly. I mean, the first thing one's got to have a look at and what's on the top of every investor's mind at the moment, and it's whether or not and how high and how sticky inflation is going to be.
Yes.
Not only in the US, but ultimately feeding through into perhaps emerging markets and specifically South Africa as well. Obviously, if inflation remains very elevated, the natural sort of policy response from central bankers would be to increase interest rates pretty quickly and aggressively. And in that environment, we would expect it to be quite negative for equities overall.
Yes.
Just to kind of continue on that, I think the point here would be, in our view, we don't see hyperinflation coming through, not in the US and not locally as well. The inflation that you're really seeing is caused by supply bottlenecks on the one side and rising commodity prices, as was discussed there, oil, and increasing, now to highs last seen in 2014, although significantly lower than the highs actually seen in 2012, giving you some indication of the pain that could come through. The reality is, if central banks were to increase interest rates because of higher commodity prices, it's not really going to have any effect on the inflation. For that reason, we don't expect an increased sort of interest rate increasing cycle to happen imminently in the US, and nor do we really expect it to happen in South Africa, at least not very soon and not aggressively when it does happen. And in that environment, we kind of still think that, equities look relatively attractive at these sort of levels.
Okay, well, I like that hot take, especially on the hyperinflation side of things, because the likes of Jack Dorsey of Twitter basically saying hyperinflation is imminent, which is, a stupid argument, come to think about it. I mean, he joins a lot of market participants who, have held this view since around 2009, 2010, the likes of Cliff Asness, for example, who's been screaming hyperinflation has been gearing his assets or his clients' assets in that manner. I don't know how he's survived for so long, because it's been wrong for a very long time, but that's not why we're here. Alex, let's talk about your thoughts on hyperinflation or inflation, on how you're shaping your portfolios. Are you going to be in equities or out of equities, for example?
I think environment's very difficult to really make an assessment that inflation is not going to be transitory or structural at this particular stage. You know, so that creates, of course, the uncertainty, and that's why we see some movements in the market. So, but if there is higher than expected inflation, certainly from asset class perspective, equities tends to be a good hedge against that, as well as perhaps alternative assets as well. While your fixed income assets, you know, they tend to underperform in a higher inflation environment, so you rather want to be less exposed there. Now, within equities, when you've got a high inflation environment, value type of stocks tend to outperform growth investments, because when interest rates rise, it affects the high discount rates, and that affects the valuations of some of these growth stocks as well. So you have to look within a specific asset class as well. So yes, first identify your asset class, and then as well identify particular ranges or sectors you think is going to do well in such a scenario. Hyperinflation, I think, is quite a low probability event at this moment, but certainly inflation could be stickier for much longer than people anticipate.
Oh, wow. Okay. Let's jump in straight to our questions for the evening. We'll start with Russell, who's saying he's liking the solid numbers from PSG Consult. They're doing very well in increasing their assets under management, blah, blah, blah. What do you guys think about, someone who already holds PSG Consult for the long term? Should they be, maybe selling some here or just hold here? I'll start with you, Nick.
Yeah, so I think the business itself and where it sort of come from, once it sort of came out of the PSG stable as a whole, has been phenomenal. Excellent sort of growth, excellent client acquisition sort of numbers. I think really a strong sort of business and business model that continues, I think, to take market share. In that sort of environment, I think some of that sort of growth upside has been priced in. But certainly, as it stands at the moment, I think it's a clear hold in sort of a portfolio, if you like the stock. At the moment.
Yeah, both PSG Consult and Coronation seem to be actually having a great time here. Let's jump into our next question here from Jonathan Govender. Says, can the panel advise which share is better between Rebosis ordinary shares or Rebosis preference shares? I guess it's, for the a turnaround story here, which one would be better, in terms of risk reward? Alex.
Look, I haven't looked into the Rebosis pref shares, so I can't really comment on that. But if I talk about the general Rebosis, we look at the valuation of the business. It is, I think, a market of about 200-odd million. And we just saw the transaction where they're going to sell their offices for excess of over 6 billion rand. And that's going to reduce the LTV to, I think, the low 40s. If that deal goes through, that deal is still, however, is not yet guaranteed to go through. And you imagine if it does go through, the valuation does look then quite interesting, because I think the overall portfolio value is still about 7 billion odd that's still left. So considering a market cap of about 300 million, 7 billion odd of assets, LTV in low 40s, you'd think that a market cap should be higher. So as a result, there should be potentially some value for equity holders in such a scenario. But the big if, of course, is that deal still needs to go through. And that's not guaranteed at this particular stage. But also the free float is quite tightly held at the moment. So I'm not too sure how many institutions are currently involved in price discovery and so forth. But as a business that certainly, but the market tells you the equity value is technically zero at the moment. So they need this deal to go through. Otherwise, the business is not a standalone equity entity anymore.
Yeah, so a lot is hinging on this deal, whether it goes through or not. For those people who already have equity in the business or looking into, open positions speculatively. Another question. Okay, well, let's look at our Twitter. This one is asking about Ellie's. Whether it's a good turnaround story also, from where it is. I mean, I remember Ellie's back in 2010 where they were talking about the imminent coming of DTTV here, digital terrestrial TV, which never happened. And obviously the shares went down. They still had that Megatron asset. So I wonder what Ellie's is like today. Nick?
Sure. I mean, looking at that share price, I think the only thing one can have a look at is whether it's value or value trap. It's certainly, if you've been a shareholder, it has been a value trap. You have been long suffering for the last sort of 5 or 6 years. I think at these sort of levels, if you've had it, I think it's probably worth just to hold it. You have lost so much of your money already. If you're looking at a new sort of purchase into the share, I'm not sure it's an imminent or guaranteed sort of turnaround. I mean, there's still some structural issues within the business that they need to sort of iron out. And, you know, for me, I think there's better value elsewhere. Although, obviously, if it turns around, that you're going to stand to make a lot of money. But in my view, that's much more gambling opposed to fundamental investing.
Yeah, like I said, it's been turning the corner since 2010. So there's been many corners, I guess. let's jump into Alex. This one is asking about British American Tobacco, which apparently sits at a very juicy dividend yield of around 8%. Well, historic. The price isn't moving much, and he says anecdotally none of his friends have actually stopped or quit smoking, even with the lockdowns that we experienced last year. So what is he missing? This is Marius from Twitter.
Yeah, I agree with the viewer there. For me, British American Tobacco is attractive at these levels. I think there's a couple of things you need to take consideration. Is this business is still growing. You know, top line is still growing. It's still expanding margins. As a result, you're still seeing increases in earnings as well as dividends. So that forward dividend will be higher than their current dividend. And at the same time, they're also deleveraging the balance sheet. That reduces interest costs and risk in the business as well, should lead to equity re-rating over time. Secondly, other than the absolute valuation, which is quite attractive, it's also attractive relative to peers. It's trading at quite a sizable discount relative to Philip Morris and a couple of others. So certainly from a valuation perspective, it is cheap. Negatives, of course, is that, you know, smoking, as we know, the volumes are declining quite quickly, but it's still got pricing power. In the US, you've got potential menthol bans as well as increases in taxes. That's having a bit of a negative impact, but it does seem to be in the price. And then, of course, ESG investors that tend to refrain from investing in tobacco stocks. But I think that cash flow is, for me, personally, just too good to ignore. And I think at some stage, British American Tobacco is going to be good news, especially that scenario which I referred to earlier, when you've got high inflation and value investing is going to do well. This is one of the counters that's going to benefit from it.
Earnings seasons has injected an upbeat mood into the markets. Facebook shares rose last night after beating expectations. Investors await more big tech earnings today. The Bloomberg team spoke with Johanna Kirkland, the head of multi-asset investments at Schroder. How big expectations are for technology companies? Thank you very much.
Well, I think it continues to be a sector that attracts flow. I mean, I think there's concern over the medium term about the resilience of earnings. Obviously, right now, we're getting a good cyclical upturn. But in the long term, this sector continues to be an area that delivers very strong structural earnings.
And sure.
I think, yeah, interest continues.
Is there macro concerns overlaying this that might make you less interested in tech, sort of the long duration bend to tech?
Yeah, the big question for this sector from a macro perspective is what happens to bond yields. Mm. But right now, actually, the fact that Powell has come out and sort of indicated that he will respond to inflation if needed, in some senses, does help to keep a lid on the long end of the curve and underpins valuations.
Well, I certainly know that you're a buyer in these equity markets, but what do you say to people who look at some of the volatility we've seen recently and say, okay, I'm just too terrified to touch this market? What is your advice to those people who just are too scared to step in and play?
Well, I think the reality is, yes, the easy money has been made. We've had the reopening trade as, you know, once the vaccines got announced. Clearly, there was a very strong cyclical upturn. Things are going to be more volatile from here, but I still think it's too early to get defensive.
Okay, I wanted to say on Friday, especially on the social media side of things, we saw the earnings from Snap. Basically, they came up on stage and they puked all over the stage. And then obviously yesterday we saw Facebook coming up and cleaning that up. Up a lot, actually being down in tandem with Snap, which was, you know, down a quarter on Friday. So I guess maybe the metaverse story is coming in there, and obviously the earnings are there for Facebook. But, you know, there's big earnings coming up. Like they said, we want to be watching things like Microsoft, and other big tech companies like Google or Alphabet, whatever you want to call it. So what do you have your eyes on, in terms of, you know, earnings this week? Maybe some of the things that you hold in your clients' portfolios. Nick?
Right. So if I have a look at these sort of earnings numbers, I mean, looking at Facebook last night, I was somewhat underwhelmed by the numbers. Yes, they're coming up with a bit of a buyback, or a significant sort of buyback. I think there's some juice in that and some value for sort of shareholders. I think they're facing quite a couple of headwinds. And I also think that if you have a look at the performance from these companies, specifically on the advertising space, the performance has been phenomenal in the first sort of, you know, 9 months of the year. Ultimately, they've started coming off a little bit. I mean, Facebook was down, what, 10, 15% off its highs until last night. I do note, however, today as U.S. markets open, it is taking a bit of a beating at the moment. So it has turned negative as well. I think looking forward, with that sort of growth asset and what you have with technology stocks, certainly there's a preference in our sort of portfolios, I think, at the moment, yep, to rather have a look at the Asian sort of tech players, which really have come under a lot of pressure, while the U.S. listed players have remained pretty robust at relatively high valuations. I think with inflation, you know, rearing its kind of head a little bit more so, and perhaps we're seeing a recovery or bond yields that are going up, I would be somewhat apprehensive to be dipping my toe into U.S. tech at the moment. I think you'll have a better opportunity to enter. So prefer a little bit of Asian technology at this time and moment.
Okay, Alex, you hear Nick likes Asian tech stocks. Your take on, you know, these upcoming earnings, what do you have your eyes on, and your preferred tech stocks, I guess, by region?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, business like Microsoft is going to be, and Alphabet's going to be the two big ones. You have to look out for, but looking at Facebook results, I'm still constructive on the business. I think the valuation for me is actually quite attractive, especially compared to the others, big techs in the United States. I think the growth profile is still excellent, and optionality they can to extract value is still phenomenal as well. You know, I think at the moment everyone loves to hate Facebook and the negative sentiment towards the business at the moment. They do have some concerns regarding Apple and the security, and it's going to have impact on the data and so forth. But I back these guys to be able to find a workable solution, and, you know, 2 years from now, people would even forget about what's happened now. You know, another one I think was also surprised the market on the negative side was perhaps Intel. You know, if you look at the numbers there, results were actually okay, but the guidance was significantly weaker than, especially from a GP perspective, amount of investment that's required in building manufacturing capacity again. But that's also a business that, you know, looks incredibly attractive from a valuation perspective, but could be a value trap. But if they can execute from these levels, Intel certainly can be something we can reap huge rewards because the valuation is very compelling. But it does come with higher risk than some of the others, perhaps.
Yeah, look, the chip makers, I guess everyone that's dependent on Southeast Asia with regards to their supply chains or manufacturing or any of the likes is having a tough time operating, and Intel is no exception. So let's jump into our questions. We have one here from the SMS line talking about the Sibanye acquisition. It says, why would they not do a scrip purchase since, you know, their share price is so high as compared to, you know, just spending the cash they have in the balance sheet? I'll start with you, Nick.
Sure. So for equity investors, more often than not, you would always prefer a company to hold to pay for something in cash opposed, yes, to getting diluted by them raising up further equity.
Yes.
So certainly I think we'd be in favor of that. On top of that, I think you've got to have a look at their current sort of cash position and cash generation within the portfolio, and they're in a very healthy sort of position. So they can afford to pay it out of existing cash along with a little bit of debt, but I think they'll generate that free cash flow pretty quickly, and so be able to deleverage very quickly off this sort of this deal goes through. Regarding the deal itself, I mean, Sibanye is an incredibly acquisitive company, so they're always on the lookout to try and bolster assets within their portfolio and continue getting scale. You know, they've said historically that really to justify, I suppose, or to be on the radar of investors globally, they need a market cap of at least $20 billion, and ultimately they're going to buy themselves into that sort of position in time. Regarding the assets, I mean, certainly you've seen this move into nickel, into a little bit of copper as well, perhaps even a touch of gold. Generally speaking, I don't know much about the assets, so I guess the proof is in the pudding. Ultimately, the diversification within the portfolio, I think, is quite attractive. So we'll need a little bit more information to really assess what sort of value could be created from this sort of asset on a looking forward kind of basis. But the shares themselves, as much as they've gone up in value a lot, I still think they're actually cheap. A lot of that is already baked into the idea that they're going to be acquisitive and they're going to continue looking for deals, and whether or not this is the right time in the cycle for those deals.
Yeah.
But I would disagree with the viewer. Even though the share price has gone up significantly, I would say that the shares are trading at historically very low levels at the moment.
Yeah. Also, one would say maybe using cash means that, you know, you're in business. You're not here to play. So, Alex, we have another question here. This one says, panel view on Fortress on a 12-month view regards Leo. So I think you talk about Fortress Property, the property company.
Yeah. So if you look at the property space, you know, obviously there's been a good recovery in the share prices, but operationally things are still very, very tough. You know, so I'd imagine that, you know, distributable earnings is still going to be under a bit of pressure for Fortress as well. And they still got the issues with the structure, Fortress A and B, that they still need to rectify. So, but if you look at Fortress A specifically, it's almost like a bond, but of a growing distribution. So, for example, it will, I think the increase in dividend is 5% or inflation, less of the two, or most of the two. So, that really means that if you've got a yield of about 8%, it can be growing. So it's actually quite of a bond-like type instrument. So it's a decent one to buy. Historically, I've bought Fortress A a few times before. Fortress B is obviously whenever it's left after paying Fortress A, and it'll be much more geared to play. And if you think the company's going to be under pressure, then I'd imagine that Fortress B perhaps is operationally much higher risk. But then again, it could be an evaluation. But for me, Fortress is not necessarily one that I'm looking at. If you do want to buy a local property counters, my preferred play is Growthpoint from a valuation perspective. Yes, it's big and it's boring, but it's looking cheap. Or you could perhaps consider something smaller like a Fairvest, which is more in a rural malls. Also, I think it's a superior business relative to Fortress at this particular stage. Fortress is more on the industrial logistics side of business as well,
yeah,
and less extent in the likes of offices.
Yes, Nick Lulama here from Twitter is asking about Altron and their special dividend. Would it still be attractive to hold after the special dividend, I guess, is the question here.
Sure. So, I mean, it's a much smaller company than it was before sort of unbundling Bytes. You know, now you're getting some of that sort of cash back. That's good, I think. They're still having some sort of growth within the portfolio and the assets there. And I think they're certainly going to be looking at how they can continue to grow that sort of asset base and their offering in time to scale up what it remains of the company. But it is certainly a small cap at the moment for me. Just from a liquidity kind of perspective, I think I prefer to sort of play elsewhere. But it's been a strong sort of performer through the last couple of years. And ultimately, if you've got the same sort of collection of assets, barring Bytes UK. So if you like that sort of space, yeah, just continue kind of holding it, I think.
Okay, so but you need to know what you're holding, so which is what you're basically referring to here. So Alpine, also from Twitter, is asking the panel's outlook on motors, please. Alex?
Yeah, so if you just look at the CMH numbers that came out, I think it was a week or two ago, it was very, very strong.
Yes.
Numbers. So we know that the used vehicle market is enjoying a very good time, as well as the car rental side, specifically within CMH, because they tied to SAFE. But within Motors, it's obviously much larger business, also got offshore expansion and so forth. And the new supply of vehicles, of course, is a bit of a problem. But it's no doubt that Motors, from a valuation perspective, is attractive. Balance sheet has been degeared substantially. And if there is a little bit of uptick and new supply and the semiconductor issues, you know, it's not as bad as feared, then certainly there's going to be a lot of upside in this sector. So I'm constructive on the sector. I do prefer CMH, but certainly Motors is also something to consider.
Okay, thank you very much. Moment of truth, gents. I'll start with you, Nick. What's your stock pick for this evening?
Stock pick is a defensive sort of stock, which is BP, British Petroleum. You know, with oil prices remaining as elevated as they've kind of got to, ideally, I suppose in the shorter term, potentially oil prices can remain at these sort of levels and or increase from here. You've got a company that is not loved by ESG investors at the moment, and rightly so, but they do have a plan on how to transform the company. And what's reflected in the share price at the moment is as though that plan doesn't exist, and as much as that is potentially an option. There's also, decreasing leverage within the business as a lot of the sort of cash flow comes through. So net-net, I think that it's trading at very sort of attractive multiples, and it does have a plan for the future. Ultimately, that's my stock pick for tonight.
Okay, BP for Nick. And Alex, your stock pick for the evening?
Yeah, I'm going for substantially smaller business than BP is Calgary M3. It's a property developer and also a motor parks business in South Africa. I thought the first interim results were very, very good. But after meeting with management, I walked away very, very bullish for the prospects for the next 18 months. And I think they're going to have a very, very strong, specifically H2 as well as H1 next year. So they develop properties, anything from between 250,000 to about a million. But the average property size is about 450,000. And they've got a record number of new properties that's being developed at this particular stage.
Yep.
I think over about 5,000 that's going to be registered over the next 6 to 12 months. So it's probably going to lead to record earnings for the business as well as good cash flows. They've learned from their mistakes in the past. Businesses substantially de-risked as well as de-geared. I rate the management team. I think they are on the right path, and I think this is what businesses need to look out for. And it's also exceptionally attractively valued at a particular moment.
Okay, thank you very much, Alex. So it's BP and Calgary M3. Write that down. Thanks to my guest, Nick Krell from Ashburton Investments and Alex Days from Umthombo Wealth. Julieta takes more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Same time, same place. Have a good evening. Yeah.